This is SDM Staff Editor Amanda Reed with Lee Odess, CEO and founder of Group 337. Hi, Lee. So happy to have you on the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, of course. And my first question is, you say that the access control industry is, quote, grossly underestimated. And I'm curious, you know, what sort of led you to come to that conclusion?
Yeah, I think it's from working in the business, number one. So from my experience at Allegion, Brevo as an integrator myself, and then working across all the different access control companies, just getting a sort of a bird's eye view, if you would, in the trenches there. And then also paying a couple of my jobs have been to work with people outside of our industry that view the access control industry as a feature of a larger value proposition. So seeing how they viewed it gave you sort of a like beyond just the high security side of what we do, made me come to the conclusion that, you know, this thing has really been a cottage industry, has a lot more legs than and headroom than what's been being reported. The other part of it is that a lot of the people that are reporting on it, they would come to people like myself at these companies. And I mean, for what it's worth, we never really gave them the answers that they wanted. So they would make stuff up, frankly. And I think it was a lagging indicator of the market, not a leading indicator of the market. I think there is lack of visibility. So I felt like as a quote unquote insider to the industry would have greater visibility to what it actually is to be able to report the real number.
Got it. Awesome. And going back to some past literature you've published, you wrote a book called The Six Phase Changes Shaping Access Control. What are some of those phase changes?
Yeah, so the premise of the book was that there was things impacting our business that we weren't necessarily talking about. Again, a lot of it was based off of old data. So that when we were looking at it, we saw them as number one being technology, of course. That's a phase change of things shifting in the marketplace of the technologies that are being used. Number two is innovation engines. So this is areas within organizations beyond just technical, but in the business, sort of how we sell things, the channels we go through. You're seeing e-commerce and a lot of that happening to where that was impacting sort of how innovation was getting done. Our industry is heavily based off of iteration, off of old platforms. Mm-hmm. And this is about introducing new things. So like people would call introduction of mobile, for instance, as innovation. It's not. It's iterating. Mm-hmm. Or if you add Wi-Fi to a lock, great. I mean, that's good for you, but it's not necessarily innovation as a whole. Mm-hmm. Marketing. So our industry heavily focused on product marketing, and you didn't see a lot of content marketing. And if anything, you saw now happening, the fact that we're doing this is a good example of mm-hmm. our industry's lack of really the ability to storytell was going to impact the way and that products were purchased and learned about. Mm-hmm. Talent. So it's no surprise our industry is a tenure sort of industry versus a talent industry. And we really value that, which we should, but we don't balance it necessarily with, you're seeing some young professional talent now being brought in. You're seeing diversity inclusion conversations, but really a lot of this has happened recently. But even bringing in and, you know, making our industry something that people that are focused on, let's say, artificial intelligence, user experience, or we can say we want those things, but unless we have the talent to do it, that's going to impact our industry. Mm-hmm. Market reach. So this is not just the geography market reach, which is part of it, but it's also the vertical. So again, our industry has been heavily focused on high security and airports and places like that, where now we're seeing a change and a shift into like the multifamily marketplace heavily. We're on a user experience side, being experts in the enterprise. So that as well, people that can go beyond the high security, but get into access control or security as a feature. Mm-hmm. And then the last but not least one was it factor. So it's this idea that when you walk into a room, people want to, they don't know who you are, what you're doing, but they want more. Mm-hmm. And this ability to sort of give off the sort of demanding the presence that is there, that it's becoming even more important, especially as more and more people are online. Like, how do you separate yourself from everybody that else is there if you're all doing the same thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all of those are really, really good points. And I think this next question is a really good follow-up to that. So we talked about the phase changes, and now I'm sort of curious, what trends do you notice currently in the access control industry? At least for me, some things that come to my mind are sort of frictionless and biometric access control solutions.
Yeah, so those are, we could talk about those. I think the first one, though, mm-hmm. that I'd like to talk about, because we typically do go to the product ones, which is interesting, right? Because mm-hmm. again, we're a very, I call it where we sell hammers. It's like we all have a product that we want to bring to market. Mm-hmm. But I would, the first one I would say is the introduction to the end user mm-hmm. into the market as a stakeholder. In the access control industry, when I say end user, I'm not talking about the business, but the actual people that carry around the mobile phones. Mm-hmm. We've historically, those people have been nothing but cards and readers on the wall. We didn't know actually who they were. They were stick figures to our systems. It was like a card number and, you know, a building number, and that would get them into, if it beeped and turned green, they were able to go in. Mm-hmm. Now you have the introduction to the end user, and that is actually now a completely different stakeholder that's going to be driving the needs and the wants of those systems that we haven't before had to worry about. So that was the first sort of one that goes there. Mm-hmm. The second one is, as the industry continues to go mainstream that we talked about, this sort of the trend of moving beyond access control being about keeping bad people out, mm-hmm. where our only use case really was to make sure no one got in with a gun or a knife and hurt other people. Mm-hmm. It's shifted now to this idea that it's letting the right people in versus mm-hmm. not letting the wrong person in, mm-hmm. which that again shifts the way that these systems are built. We studied and went back to look at the beginnings of electronic access control. We have a website coming soon where we've talked to, at this point, 30 people mm-hmm. Back from the 1970s that were working in. And the products that we are still selling to this day from 1973 have not changed very much. Mm-hmm. They were built to guard against weapons depots and really high-tech, high security need products. And it access control has shifted now to where it's not only just about, again, keeping bad people out, but it's about letting the right people in. So mm-hmm. that's a trend that has changed. The other one that I would say is this change from going from access control to access care. Mm-hmm. We talk about that. So wellness is a good example where, again, this isn't the definition of safety, and what access control did is changed. It first saw the introduction of conveniences, right? You know, think about it. Our industry was predicated off of putting up barriers and driving. Convenience was a bad thing because that meant the door was open in a lot of ways. Right now, convenience is met with wellness. So the definition of safety and having care in the people mm-hmm. side of it, to where it's now just, it's not just about keeping bad people out. It's also about making sure people don't get sick. That's a totally mm-hmm. different change. So when we move to things like frictionless, I think, you know, the desire there, I'm not a firm believer that we're going to see the level of touchless that everyone's talking about and frictionless, mm-hmm. that because frankly, the technology hasn't changed enough in access control. We have a door problem as well as an access control lock problem, mm-hmm. but our industry is just taking ADA compliant products, taking an eraser to that and called them frictionless. And they've iterated off of old platforms. And frankly, that's lazy, number mm-hmm. one. And it's not what the marketplace is looking for. So I think the desire for frictionless and touchless is there. We haven't met the marketplace with what it needs, and we need to do that. Last but not least, sorry, I'll keep going. But
you're fine.
All right, I appreciate it. The biometric side, like you talked about. So mm-hmm. again, I think this comes down to a level of assurance mm-hmm. And it's a level of the desires of people coming to the market and coming to the products and representing themselves to it, and then the systems responding to that. Mm-hmm. And the shift is if we aren't careful, we're going to do the same thing that the touchless and frictionless people are doing, and we're going to bring a product that was not built for the use case of what we're talking about, mm-hmm. and we're going to introduce old iterated products to new use cases. That's why I like, there's some companies that are out there that are. And we've done some content around the next generation of biometrics, which is mm-hmm. We got coming out later this week, next week, which is around the idea that it has shifted now. So yeah, mm-hmm. biometrics is there, but I actually think it's now the new next generation of biometrics, not the old biometrics as we know them from before.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, you alluded to the new generation of biometrics. What do you think that looks like?
So a couple things. I do think facial starts to get a rebirth in a lot of ways because of the way that it's done. I think a shift away from like pattern matching to neural networks and utilizing the AI at the edge, like doing things like that is a change where the matching isn't just like a one-to-one type thing, but it's a one-to-many and it's done in a quicker, faster way than it was before. And maybe even a more secure way, in a lot of areas on that end. I think it's a multimodal type approach. And that's going to do that. I also think it's embedded, which is a little bit different. Like we've been doing this, like things that hang on old systems. I actually think a lot of this starts to get embedded into the different technologies. So that's just some examples.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned research earlier on. So I'm sort of curious, what kind of metrics do you look at when looking at the access control industry? Because I think it's sort of interesting putting numbers to a sort of not exactly tangible thing, you know?
Yeah. No, so recently we just did a study where on the metrics of actually the marketplace, number one. So like we started there, which we talked about. And the ways that we're looking at that is the, sort of the breakdown of the different verticals and the adoption of everything from hardware to software. We're looking at retrofit to new construction. I think that's important. I think net new versus add-on. You know, our market has been historically focused on new construction, but the retrofit market. I'm interested in understanding sort of the daily users as we have these new mobile products that go out. We haven't necessarily really looked at that, but actually you start to see metrics now in access control. Like as we start to talk about cities returning to work and people returning to work, you're starting to see like cloud architecture actually go beyond this sort of, but like when I was at Brevo, we were the weirdos in the back corner of IC West and GSX. And that was, as is, to now everybody has that, right? It's not, it's, so we've moved beyond that being a thing and it's now, what does that thing do? And some of that areas is the metrics and the data that comes out about like, how do our systems helping people be more efficient, operational efficiencies, helping people get back to work? Like there's a lot around that type of stuff that before historically, when these things were closed and you couldn't get to that information, it made it really hard to do that. So that's an example. And then I think, I think we moved to things like lifetime value. So things that were historically our metrics that SaaS systems, have. So CAC and LTV and a bunch that I think will start to get far more interesting so we can benchmark and really start to have more business conversations about like what impact are we having?
Yeah. And other than access control, what other research about the security industry interests you? And if it's only access control, why, and you sort of alluded to this earlier, you know, why focus on the access control industry itself?
Well, personally, I come from the access control primarily and I like it. So I've got somewhat of a love affair with this idea of the interaction that people have with themselves and places. So I've always been somewhat interested in that. So, but I started it with the access control because it really wasn't a lot of people that were talking about it. But when we started Group 337, it was this idea. There's a lot of people like Seth Godin and whatnot that talk about this ability. If you get 1,000 people interested in it, you can create a tribe of and have a business around that. So I figured like, all right, let's go build for access control. And then we quickly shifted to other things too, like visitor management has been an area that we've seen focus. Now it's somewhat overlaps into access control. We've started to look at and have had conversations around the IP video side, building management. I think we get into identity. My intent is to have these sort of niches that we can go deep into and provide resources for the marketplace that are seen to have value.
Awesome. And going back to sort of the timeline of your career, how did you get interested in research and trend reporting?
Yeah, it's funny. I think I would say that more fell into that. I have a high level of curiosity in a lot of areas. So I like to dig into the understanding of the why, or I enjoy the banter and sort of the arm wrestling around ideas, to sort of the curiosity around, you know, if I have a point of view, I'd like to hear other people's point of views. And I actually think we need to do a bit more around the debating side of things, especially when it comes to some of these power structures that exist in our industry around, like, you know, it's because we've been doing it for 30 years doesn't mean we should be doing it for the next 30 years, but there are some things we should and continue, but there's new ones that need to be introduced. So when I left, the research side sort of happened in, by just being curious about the industry and trying to correlate, you know, this is happening and that is happening, or, you know, things that were rattling around in my brain when at a couple places I worked at, I was, you know, I would help, not necessarily looking at like the future, but like the near future of saying, here's the market trends and things that we see, and let's triangulate this together. And what do they mean? Then when I got into doing this, I saw, you know, accidentally I wrote something that was, I put on LinkedIn, which was kind of funny. It was, when I started to do the phase changes, I was thinking out loud and I graphed a bunch of companies' logos. I don't think anyone read what I wrote, but they saw the graph and the logos, and, you know, and it sparked a conversation, and it went to like 80,000 views and good hundreds of comments and conversation that said to me, man, there's a need for this stuff, because if that much engagement happens on something that was not even thought about, really, what would happen if we were purposeful for what we're doing? And so now we're being purposeful.
Yeah. And my next question, I think, is sort of like the perfect next question. I know I said that earlier, but how did then Group 337 come about, and why did you, and again, you've mentioned this earlier, but like, why did you see a need for something like this in the industry?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story that some of this happens by accident. So when I left Allegion last January, to be honest with you, I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to do. What I did know is what I wanted to work on, projects that I wanted to work on with people that I wanted to work on. And frankly, I started it by just saying, I'm going to write about what I believe, and I'm going to put that out there, because I want people, you know, I have a point of view, and if, at least if my mom reads it, at least somebody's read it, right? So it was therapeutic for me to just express myself. And, you know, I lucky enough, I saw that people started to sign up for it and listen to it and the rest. And I figured I'm either creating a really good resume or a company, and I figured neither of them is going to be bad. So fast forward, at the same time, I bought a camera and I started recording and was doing podcasts. There wasn't many at that point. There wasn't really podcasts and video casts. And I started interviewing some of the people I knew from the industry, like CEOs and startups that not a lot of people were talking about. And when COVID happened, I had 70 recordings with people. So we started putting those out. And then, yeah, you just fast forward. We just continue to be consistent on content and information, and, you know, formulating a point of view that people said, hey, I like that, we want some more of that. So from the consulting side, then from the report side, it was an identification really of just an expression of what myself and a handful of other people were thinking. And we put it into writing, and next thing you know, we've got a company now that, you know, is through, you know, a year and a handful of months, and still growing and doing so. I think we got a thing. I think it's more of a company than a resume at this point.
Yeah, that's awesome. And definitely just by looking at the axis of access control that Group 337 has published, you guys are definitely making a big splash in the industry. And COVID-19, I feel like, is a big topic right now, because we're obviously living through it, and it's sort of, it's hard to not talk about it. So I'm sort of curious how you think COVID-19 has changed the access control industry. Has it made us focus on innovation more, or has it sort of, as you said, made us focus more on iteration instead of innovation?
Well, I think if anything, it's accelerated. It's done a couple of things. It's accelerated some of the things that were changing anyways and coming to the marketplace, like cloud architecture, mobile, things like that, that frankly were seen at the time as nice to haves, but have now moved to need to haves. And, yeah. and I think that, that ship has sailed at this point, right? So that was inevitably going to happen. It was a case of when, not if. Mm-hmm. Then you had some things I believe sort of fall off that were happening before. And frankly, I think, like, for instance, frictionless was one of those things that we, you know, in Seamless and whatnot, were things that were talked about before that frankly right now are a little irrelevant to what's going on, because we've moved into like touchless and some of those conversations, right? So there's been introduction of new stuff and, you know, an acceleration. Like let's rewind a bit. Visitor management from our industry was seen as a feature add-on that was like, if you needed to document, you know, sign in to places, it wasn't seen as a front end to a better user experience for access control systems. And now it is. Like mm-hmm. the fortunate part is the readers that we had before weren't able to have this great, unique user experience. It was somewhat democratized as the same thing. It beeped, you went in. Mm-hmm. Like now though, this idea that I can't have somebody in the office, but I still need to interact and have health attestation and you know, reduce risk. So now visitor management turned to everybody management, right? So mm-hmm. like those things came out of nowhere now and sort of rocket shipped into it. So I think it's a combination of a lot of that. It's also, I think, done a couple things that our industry for the past 10 years has frankly been a lot of managers in the business. And we're mm-hmm. now starting to see we need some more leaders in the business. Yeah. And not that the managers are bad. It's just at the time that they were built for that particular moment where, you know, we were coming off of a very bullish market that was just growing and growing. It was like, really, it was frankly like, how do I not screw this thing up? So now how do I work my way through this? So I think mm-hmm. you're starting to see new people step up, new voices, old voices that have always been leaders step up, and frankly, overshadowing some of the people that probably need new leadership in that end. So that's been somewhat opening. And then lastly, I would say we've seen an influx of new money come into the space, like from venture capitalists, like the stuff that was happening with Latch and the SPAC that they did, to people like OpenPath and NextKey. Like you're seeing new people come into the marketplace that we have. Usually our industry was made up of people that, you know, from the industry would build up a company, they'd sell it to like HID or Linnell mm-hmm. or ASA or Acre or somebody like that. And mm-hmm. then wait 2 years and then retread back and to build something again. Now that you have this sort of new rush of people coming into the market that are bringing new ideas and new thoughts, and it's moving in a totally different speed than it did before. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I'll say is the young professional, diverse talent that we have now speaking up, that I think COVID has made by everyone working from home and having to go online, it neutralized the corporate communications departments and legal departments that controlled the voice of our industry. Mm-hmm. So now it's a little bit harder for them to control people that are on influencing, creating content and video and mm-hmm. having conversations that historically were not happening other than at trade shows. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you can be anybody in our industry and have a good point of view and post it, and the viral side of it will happen. That's mm-hmm. new. And that's exciting in my opinion. So I think that's here to stay.
Yeah, definitely. After posting this podcast, some person on LinkedIn could listen to it, and 2 years from now, they'll be in your seat, you know, being a podcast guest.
We'll see.
Yeah,
probably.
Well, Lee, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we log off and end the pod?
No, let's keep the conversation going. There's no better time to be in our industry than now, frankly, because there's very rare that you get to participate in sort of the fabric of something being ripped apart and put back into place. And we have that opportunity to do that. So it's exciting. So, and I appreciate the opportunity in you doing this. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for agreeing to be on, Lee. Anyway, this is SDM staff editor, Amanda Reed. Lee, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to sit down and chat with me. And you can check out the rest of our podcasts on our website, www.sdmmag.com.